This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So, Salt Lake City, here we come? It sure sounds that way right now around the NHL. Now, a lot of today's show is going to revolve around the Arizona Coyotes situation and, as some people would put it, an impending move to Salt Lake City for next season. Real quickly, here's what's coming up on the show today. Again, lots on this story. Elliot's in the air, so he's flying back from Vancouver. So he won't be on the show today. Him and I will record a podcast and get more into this. That'll be out tomorrow morning. Then Elliot will return tomorrow afternoon. But we will play something for you here in a couple of moments. Elliot was on the Phoenix Coyotes podcast with Craig Morgan, Leah Merrill, and Steve Peters. We'll get a couple of clips from Elliot from that. And also, thought it'd be a good idea, considering it looks like there's another owner in the waters here, and maybe you're familiar with him and maybe you're not. If you're a basketball fan, you know the name Ryan Smith. He's the owner of the Utah Jazz. Now, he's the prospective owner of the Salt Lake City Coyotes, the Utah Coyotes, the Utah or Salt Lake City fill-in-the-blanks. I thought it'd be a good idea today to play back an interview or part of an interview that Elliot and I did with Ryan Smith going back last season. This is when his name started to get bandied about, and this was the first interview that he did. A sort of get to know you, what are your plans kind of interview with Ryan Smith. We've grabbed about 8 or 9 minutes worth of some interesting comments from Ryan Smith going back last year, which are particularly salient now for obvious reasons. And we'll play that for you here coming up in a couple of moments. We will get into some of the games tonight and some of the situations around the NHL. We'll talk about the New York Islanders with Thomas Hickey, Islanders analyst and from the NHL Network as well. We'll also talk to Gordon Monson. Now, Gordon's a writer with the Salt Lake Tribune, and he wrote a piece yesterday on hockey, NHL hockey, because, as I'm always reminded, there is hockey there. Hello, ECHL. NHL hockey going to Salt Lake City. Also, Anton Thun will stop by. Now, Anton is a former NHL agent, always been, you know, very candid and outspoken on various NHL issues, certainly while he was an agent. And I'll tell you, some of my favorite primetime sports shows with Bob McCowan featured Anton Thun and Bob going back and forth on various issues, mainly during things like lockouts. So looking forward to talking to Anton about this and what a move like this would mean from a player's point of view. What happens when your team pulls up stakes and leaves? Now, a quick thought on that one, because one of the things that I wondered about was no trade clauses for players all over the NHL. So let's say that the Arizona Coyotes, as Elliot has wondered in his piece at .ca, on April 18th, they pull up stakes and they're off to Utah. They're off to Salt Lake City. What happens to players that have the Arizona Coyotes on their no trade list? Now, one agent that I spoke to this morning said that carries. So if you're a player that has Arizona on your no trade list, all of a sudden you now have Salt Lake City on your no trade list. But, you know, he's had clients that have done this, that have gone from one city to another in a relocation. Brian Little would come to mind, Atlanta Thrashers, Winnipeg Jets. So we'll get into a lot of this with Anton coming up in hour two. Also in hour two, we're going to do it. We're going to talk about the Flyers again. And Charlie O'Connor, our good friend from The Athletic, stops by. It has been the roughest of stretches for the Philadelphia Flyers. I don't need to remind you of that. 1-6-3 in their last 10. And we've seen John Tortorella take a much different tone and approach when it comes to his Philadelphia Flyers. We'll get into the Flyers, we'll get into the Islanders, and a lot on Salt Lake City and the Arizona Coyotes, and whatever else we can cram into 2 hours of a hockey broadcast here. In the meantime, excuse me, my voice is kind of going a little bit, as I'm sure you can hear. I've kind of spent a lot of time on the phone in the last 24 hours. How are you today, Maddie?
I'm good. Lots going on. I mean, again, too much for a two-hour program, but here we are.
It's okay. We'll try to cram in as much as possible. So just to get everybody caught up, so a memo sent out yesterday to the NHL Board of Governors saying that progress has been made to move the Arizona Coyotes to Utah. Again, lots needs to be done here still. But as we've talked about before, the NHL, Gary Bettman, Bill Daly have been hard at work addressing the situation right now with the Arizona Coyotes and also putting together an idea for how hockey can work eventually in Arizona. So both the short-term and long-term futures of the Arizona Coyotes. The NHL is essentially, Maddie, working as a broker in this deal. Like, they're the middle person here between Alex Morello, the owner of the Arizona Coyotes, and Ryan Smith, the prospective owner here. The speculation is, and this goes back to Elliott's piece again, Morello will be paid somewhere in the area of $1 billion for this one. Smith will pay $1.2 billion for the Utah franchise, and the $200 million will be divided up amongst the other owners. And there is probably, like, there is a strong belief that, as we all know, Arizona is a destination the NHL likes to be in. They believe in that market. They think it has long-term opportunity and long-term growth attached to it. And it is believed that Alex Morello, and again, this will take some massaging here, not sure where all the contingencies would be, but he would be offered right of first refusal to bring an expansion team to Arizona. That would be one of the contingencies as well with any sale, and Elliott mentioning April 18th as a target date for all of this happening. So, Maddie, man, you've been doing a lot of great work, specifically cutting up clips and some stuff that we're going to have to push to tomorrow, and you'll hear more about that. So you cut up part of the interview on the podcast, the Phoenix Coyotes podcast, the Craig Morgan podcast with Leah Merrill and Steve Peters. So this is Elliott from last night's podcast. Then we'll play for you maybe your first introduction to who Ryan Smith is, potential new owner in the NHL. Let's start off here, though, with Elliott on the podcast last night, the Phoenix Coyotes podcast. This is a sort of, right now, a first sort of time attempt on where everything stands with the Coyotes' potential move to Salt Lake City. Here's for each.
Elliott, why don't you just give us the lay of the land, the latest things. We'll just start there. What are you hearing?
Well, I think this is moving in a direction. There's no question about that, and everybody's trying to be careful because there's a lot of work that needs to get done. And in the world of where things like this occur, until the lawyers sign off on everything, nothing is done until it's done. So, but I think they're basically working around the clock to try to get this done by next week. I think there's a real desire to have it put together before the players break off and go their separate ways. I do think that's a very big part of this equation. I think also that they want to get it over with so that, you know, people could have some certainty about where this is going and what the answers are going to be for the future and for people's own careers, not necessarily players, but people, you know, who do regular work inside the Coyotes organization. But we're moving in this direction, and everybody's trying to see if it can happen and get it done, and we'll see where we are next Thursday.
What could still derail this?
It sounds like a lot of, based on what I heard about the memo that was sent around today, it sounds like a lot of this has kind of been put together, but you just never know. I mean, like, the one thing I learn about these things, Craig, is that people don't like it when they become public, because, you know, there's been there's an emotional reaction from the true hardcore Coyotes fans. I've seen some of it online today. And, you know, I always am careful. You don't allow what you see online to make you think it's a true shape of people's reactions. But there's a lot of emotion. And I think sometimes when this stuff gets out, whether people feel pressure or people get affected by the reaction of it, it can affect the way that they go about getting things done or how they feel about going out and getting things done. I really do feel, though, that this is pretty far down the road. I don't think that the memo and information that would have been sent out today as it was, without everybody feeling relatively secure that it was going to happen. But the one thing people always say is that you never know how public reaction can affect something like this. But I think it's much more likely than not that it gets done.
Okay, so that's the first clip we played. So that is Elliott on the Phoenix Coyotes podcast from yesterday. Again, Elliott is traveling today. He'll be on the program tomorrow, and we'll do a podcast about this later on this evening that comes out tomorrow morning. Now, Maddie, we've talked a lot about how there is a real sensitivity around all of this, and the NHL has tread lightly on the issue and tried to be as vague as possible. as to not derail the process. Like, we had Craig Morgan on the show last week, and what did he say about Alex Morello specifically? It's almost as if this thing is ego-driven. A lot of this is personal for him, that in a lot of ways, Alex Morello wants to show everybody else that he can do this and keep the Arizona Coyotes in Arizona. And that's why, you know, when Craig asked that question to Elliot, the first thing that I wondered is, you know, you don't, if you're the NHL or if you're Ryan Smith, you don't want to upset the owner of the Arizona Coyotes or embarrass the owner of the Arizona Coyotes right now, considering it sounds like we're into the short strokes of putting this deal together, and you don't want it to get derailed right at the end. Like, if you'll notice, like, I think we mentioned it when it happened, that open letter that Ryan Smith wrote asking the NHL to initiate the expansion process, like, that is done very much with the approval of the NHL. I don't think that Ryan Smith, and we'll hear from him here in a couple of seconds from our 32 podcast, when he came on the show, I don't believe for one second that he didn't get the okay from the NHL in order to do it. If the NHL really wanted Ryan Smith to continue to remain anonymous and have his interest in the NHL cloaked, they would have told him, we think it's a bad idea if you do this. And he wouldn't have. So underneath the umbrella of everything you hear coming out of Salt Lake City publicly is done with the blessing of the NHL, I thought the wording was really intriguing, because at no point in that open letter at all does Ryan Smith mention relocation? Because the minute you mention relocation, all of a sudden the alarm bells go off and people start wondering about and talking about and speculating on and sticking microphones in people's faces about the Arizona Coyotes. Very deliberately, he mentioned expansion, not relocation. One more clip from Elliot here. Here's Friedman again on the Phoenix Coyotes podcast with Craig Morgan on how we got here in the first place.
When and I'm just speaking from what we hear at PHNX, is when did this turn? And I mean that everything we've heard from Javier Gutierrez, from Alex Morello Sr., from the Coyotes organization has all been positive. We're going to make it to this June 27th auction. We reached out to Bill Daly and Gary Bettman, and it kind of got the inference that they were also going to wait for this auction, and we'll wait and see what happens. And then all of a sudden, literally within the next 48 to 72 hours, this has completely changed. What happened?
You know, Steve, I think it's been on and off for a lot of the last few months. I really do. Like, you know, there was a lot of noise. I think the last time I was on was just around the All-Star break. There was a lot of noise back then, and it kind of calmed down and went away. And then a couple weeks after the the All-Star break, I was hearing a lot of noise again that this was going to get done, that there was going to be a move. And then, you know, a couple of people said to me, I think it was right before the trade deadline. It was right before Bettman met with the media at the GM meetings. I was hearing a lot of this is coming again, that it's coming. And then they kind of got and that was when we weren't sure yet about the date for the auction. I was hearing it a lot, and then the date came out and it kind of calmed down again. And then I would say within the last week to 2 weeks, there started to be a lot of noise, Steve. So I think the best way I can answer it is it kind of went like that. There were times when it looked like they were going to wait, and there were times when it looked like something was going to change. I think there was a lot of pressure from the Players Association. I think there was a lot of pressure from the other owners. And to be honest, I think, Steve, when it was kind of realized that, you know, they might have to stay in Mullet for 3 more years anyway, I just think there was a lot of pushback. And I think even the NHL just said, you know what, we can't do this for 3 more years. And I think it picked up a lot in the last week or two.
Okay, so that's Elliot, and we encourage you all. Like, those are just a couple of clips from Elliot. The entire podcast with Craig Morgan, Leah Merrill, and Steve Peters, you can find online, PHNX Coyotes podcast. Encourage you to listen to the entire thing or watch on YouTube, the entire thing. They've always done great work, and obviously they've been on the story from day one. Certainly Craig Morgan has done a lot of heavy lifting around this story for quite some time here. Frank Saravalli, who broke the story yesterday afternoon, was also on that podcast, so I encourage you to go and listen or watch the entire episode if you want more details. but speaking of details, one of the things through all of this is, who is Ryan Smith? And Ryan Smith is, well, first of all, he's the owner of the Utah Jazz of the NBA. He's considered one of the brightest and most energetic owners in the NBA and potentially in the NHL. He's someone that a lot of leagues covet. You know, when we sat down to do this interview with Ryan Smith, I did not know a ton about him. Got to learn a lot over the course of the interview. But I came away from it saying to myself that this is probably the kind of person that Gary Bettman, Bill Daley, Board of Governors wants in their mix. He's young. He's got a lot of energy. He has a lot of ideas. He's run a number of successful businesses, a very successful sports operation in the NBA as well. The whole thing just kind of seemed hand to glove. Maybe I should use that analogy on a day like this. The whole thing kind of seemed a little bit like it would work, would fit.
It did work for somebody.
I probably
Jeff.
Shouldn't use it, that one either.
It did work for somebody.
Yeah, no, I know. I get that one. So let's get to this is Ryan Smith on the 32 Thoughts podcast last year. Okay, this is the first time we had a chance to sit down, did a long form interview. Maddie's cut up a number of clips here to put together. This is Ryan Smith, who may be the next owner in the NHL, on the 32 Thoughts podcast. Enjoy.
All right, so let's get to the NHL. You are the owner, as you mentioned, of the Utah Jazz and also Real Salt Lake of MLS. There you have an NHL connection. David Blitzer is a co-owner, and he's a co-owner of the New Jersey Devils. We have heard a lot about your interest. Tell us about your interest in the NHL.
Yeah, so first, Blitz is a complete gem. Like, I love Blitz, and he's a great partner, and we're having a lot of fun. He owns a lot of soccer teams and is a part of it. But he also, if he tells you he has one night, it's going to be at the Devils, right? Like, he says that. That's like his favorite thing. Look, and I'm fortunate enough to cross paths with a lot of folks in the NHL, whether it's John Cooper or Gretz or, mm-hmm. you know, Tom Dundon. You know, these are folks that I know. Most of it's through golf. And if I look at in our market, like, I think Utah and Salt Lake City, I mean, we're the fastest growing state with the number one economy in the country, right, in the U.S. And we have been mm-hmm. one of the fastest growing states for a long time, and the growth in our state is really unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And so this isn't the Salt Lake that Utah sports that maybe you saw in The Last Dance of basketball or something like that. Like, the whole world's changed. And with that, it's really shined a lot of light on who we are and like what we can become. And I think if you look at what we offer is a state, you've got that growth. And you also have like what I would call the winter sports capital of the world. The Olympics are coming back here. And we 7 million people are coming in every year for winter sports. Almost every single winter sports is headquartered right here within 20 minutes of Salt Lake City, one way or another. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at the success we've had and how much people like to go out, you know, it's a very family focused environment where people love to go to games. Like, we've got 240 straight sellouts of the Utah Jazz. And during that time, there's a lot of different makeups of teams. Like, last year was not our best year because we kind of went through a rebuilding and it didn't matter. Like, the place was full. And so if you look at that and you say, okay, I think hockey's really kind of mesmerizing a lot of people right now. And I think the growth of it, I also think it's on the back of a growth of people wanting in-person experiences. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that with retail and the way people shop. We're seeing that with different things people buy and the pickup of travel and experiences on what this new generation wants. So you've kind of got this perfect setup for hockey. We're also the youngest demographic in the United States. And I think from our standpoint with our group, we kind of had to ask the question, are we into basketball? Are we actually coming into sports, and can we actually build out a broader business? And basketball was the first, I thought it was going to be soccer, but actually it was basketball was the first part of what we call Smith Entertainment Group, SEG. And we just see hockey fitting in perfectly. We think the market's going to be as receptive as what you've seen in Seattle or Las Vegas. And we also think we can be phenomenal partners with the NHL. I mean, we're one of the youngest groups in the NBA for sure. We think about it differently. We just hosted the All-Star game and it was incredible. And we think Utah is ripe for it. So that's where the interest comes from, kind of where we're at.
I'm curious what fans have told you in Salt Lake about hockey and a desire for it. Like when we hear Salt Lake City plus hockey in Canada, we think of Olympics and we think of 2002, like that cup. Now I grew up, I'm in my mid 50s now, and I grew up, in an era where the Salt Lake Golden Eagles were like farm teams for the Seals and the Bruins, and it doesn't matter, the Western League or the IHL, like this is a great farm team market. What has the local fan base told you about their sports appetites specifically around hockey? I'm just curious, like, how much of a clamoring there is for hockey there.
So I think with any new franchise or new platform that comes in, I mean, there's definitely somewhat of an education process, whether that's hockey or baseball or soccer. Like we've seen it with MLS, right? I've got a pretty good read on where fans are with social media, obviously, because I get blown up all the time. Like, let's go, bring hockey. Like, we want it, I'm buying season tickets. But we have a history of hosting not only whether it's the Grizzlies or the Golden Eagles, but we've got Kings and Golden Knights, preseason that's here. I mean, October 5th is, I think, when they're coming, the Frozen Fury that we have. And that normally sells out. And this isn't that new. I mean, we're pretty well calibrated. You know, the arena that we have right now is able to put ice down pretty quickly and, like, turn it. There's some seat restrictions to where it would be optimal, but our fan base has been receptive. And I actually believe that what we could do with the sport, especially in the winter, outdoor, really turning it into something, actually really excites me. You know, we had such an incredible winter, and I would love to say, hey, how do we activate the community a little bit more? Because I mean, as a kid, I used to play roller hockey all the time, like all the time. Like, you know, there was never a sport that I got more injured at, but it was like, it was one of our favorite things to do. And so there's like these cultures here, but no one's ever said, hey, look, we have this team and we're going to set up all the other functions around and really build this out.
Like, what are you talking about there, Ryan? Like, what, I'm very curious about this. What are you talking about there?
The Utah Jazz and the Miller family, who owned it before, and we have the largest youth and oldest, I think, ongoing. We have 60,000 kids that play junior Jazz basketball. And, you know, Utah, we're not struggling on the kid front. And so if you actually look at the education process, that how cool would it be if these kids grew up with the opportunity to jump in and hockey was an option, right? And so if you back your way into that and say, all right, we have this incredible model with junior Jazz. Obviously, it's easier to grab a soccer ball and a basketball and go. But how do you make that similar? And I could easily see a world where my kids are older and we look back and go, holy cow, like Utah, this should have happened years ago in this way, right? Like, how do you build out that infrastructure? How do you do it in the winter? How do you set it up indoor? And we have land here. It really fits. Like, it seems logical, right? And everyone I talk to about that is like, whoa, this is like super logical. Yeah, it should be hockey, right?
First arena, you mentioned the seating isn't perfect now. Do you see the day when the Olympics come that there will be a new rink for the Jazz and the as yet unnamed hockey team?
Oh, for sure. Like, if we're rolling in those two together, that's no question. And whether that's in the existing spot or a new spot, I think that's part of it. But the good news is I think some of the land struggles that you see in other places, I think we're a little more set up for that for whatever reason. And it doesn't mean there's like a whole bunch of empty land. It's just more of the structure of our city and state, there's a little bit more opportunity in the way that it's kind of grown out. Mm-hmm. I think in the current spot, I don't know what we fit at the Frozen Brewery, like 14,000, 13,500. Mm-hmm. So it's not nothing, right? Like, it's doable and a good, incredible experience. But there's definitely, like, as someone who comes from the experience space, there's a better experience.
You're smart enough to know what I'm trying here, but existing team relocated or expansion team?
Is that a question?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Look, I mean, with the existing team relocation, I think my message has been consistent to Gary and Bill. Is like, look, we're a partner. We're a willing partner. We're here. We're ready. Like, we're here to help. However we can be helpful. And whether you should come out and say that or not, like, I am who I am. Like, we're here. We're ready. We're ready to help however we can. If there's a part of the process that they need and we can be helpful, I'm ready to go. We've already made that decision that we're here to help.
Wow.
But it's hard to not look at Seattle and Vegas and go, what an incredible job that any league's done on expansion and like the action. And I mean, holy cow, like that's a playbook to how to do it.
Okay, there he is, folks. You can hear the entire interview wherever you get your podcast. That is Ryan Smith, prospective new owner in the NHL. Should everything go the way that it is trending right now, which would see the Arizona Coyotes move to Salt Lake City to become either the Salt Lake City Blanks or the Utah Blanks. Take your pick there. You can hear the rest of that podcast, hear the whole thing, wherever you get your podcast. You know, your Spotify's, your Apple Podcasts, wherever. You can get it there, Amazon. Okay. So that is Ryan Smith. Maybe that's the first time you've heard him, but a couple of things come to mind right away. Visionary, energetic, young, and he talks a lot about the younger demographic in Salt Lake City, the younger demographic in Utah as well. Like, a lot of this is music to the ears of the NHL. Maddie, I'm not sure whether you heard that podcast last year when we talked to Ryan Smith. Maybe that was your first time listening to it when you were cutting it up last night. Do you have a thought on Ryan Smith as a new owner in the NHL? And it does feel weird saying Ryan Smith and not thinking about the old Oiler, Islander, etc.
It's funny because Lance and I just had that conversation. Like, oh, Ryan Smith made a lot of money post NHL career. Listen, at the end of the day, Jeff, this is a guy who has the financial backing, which is first and foremost, the most important thing when running an NHL, any sports franchise, is you have to have the funds to do it. And it looks like that is not going to be a problem. It's an interesting market for sure. I mean, I can't guess how it's going to work, but this is an owner who, like you talked about, he's young, which is what the NHL probably wants and needs at this point in time.
Yeah.
He's the thing that the one word that I can describe him from hearing this interview, and I had heard it before, genuine. That's what I got from him. Like, he said it multiple times. Like, I don't know if I should be saying this or not, but this is me, and this is, you know, this is what you're gonna get. I think that's important.
Yep.
The name that kind of comes to mind when I think about that, and it's somebody that he, you know, has crossed paths with. The guy is Tom Dundon. That's the other guy that I thought about when, you know, when he's describing himself. That's what I think about when I think of Tom Dundon. So it's a really interesting scenario. I do like how in there, you know, he talked about, well, there's, you know, land deals in other places that were set up for this or set up for that. And I'm like, oh, he's talking about Arizona there. So listen, I'm very much looking forward to seeing how this works. Yeah. I can't wait for us to broadcast a show live from Utah for the Jeff Merrick Show starting next season. We should put that in the budget.
Why not? Why not? Yeah. Pull some money off the tree in the backyard.
Yeah.
We'll just hop on a plane and get to Salt Lake City ASAP. Okay. Again, the PHNX podcast, you can listen to it. You can watch it. That is the Craig Morgan podcast with Lee and Steve. That's the one that has Elliot Friedman and Frank Saravalli on it. That was from yesterday. The Ryan Smith clips you just heard from are part of the 32 Thoughts podcast. We should probably re-release that to bump it up in everyone's podcast feeds. But that was from a podcast we did last year. That was the first time that Ryan Smith spoke publicly about his interest in bringing NHL hockey to Utah. So if you feel so inclined and want to know more on either the story or the person trying to bring NHL hockey to Utah, check those two podcasts out. Do want to mention, coming up in the second hour, we're going to get back on this story from a couple of different perspectives. Gordon Monson is a columnist from the Salt Lake Tribune. So he'll talk to us about the market, what Salt Lake City can welcome, or what like Salt Lake City can do for the NHL, how it is equipped, and what the appetite is there for the NHL. Also, Anton Thun. Now, Anton is still a consultant with Cortex. He's a Cortex management executive consultant. Former NHL agent, has always been opinionated and at times outspoken on various NHL issues. We'll get his thoughts on this situation right now between Arizona and Salt Lake City. And also, and maybe we'll use Brian Little as an example because that was one of his clients who went through this. Talk to us about what happens when you're a player and your team pulls up stakes and goes somewhere else. In Brian Little's case, it would have been from Atlanta to Winnipeg. So that's still to come. And Charlie O'Connor will talk to us about the Philadelphia Flyers. 1-6-3 in their last 10. They are losing a lot of games, running out of energy, and running out of runway to try to make it back now into the postseason. Hasn't been good. But joining me next, we'll talk about the New York Islanders. Things have been good there, right? Nicely tucking themselves into a playoff position. The New York Islanders, that is. Islanders analyst, NHL Network star, Thomas Hickey, former NHL defenseman, drops by in moments. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. An announcement coming from the Anaheim Ducks. At the end of the season, Jacob Silfverberg will retire. So he's announced his retirement. To me, Silfverberg was always one of those, and I mentioned this on Twitter, low-key, sulky trophy candidates. And he played on a line in Anaheim where there were three players who you could always usually make sulky cases for. There was Ryan Kessler. Selke, obviously, Jacob Silfverberg, and yes, you in the back, correct, Andrew Cogliano. That was an awesome line. Good luck with those guys on you. That was a very effective line for the Anaheim Ducks, and congratulations to Jacob Silfverberg, who calls it a career. In the meantime, we shift our attention and our focus, albeit briefly, off of Arizona and Salt Lake City, and turn our attention to the how are they doing this New York Islanders, who find themselves nestled into a very nice playoff spot. They've won 5 straight games and face off against the Montreal Canadiens tonight, looking to stay in third in the Metropolitan Division. Thomas Hickey, Islanders analyst and NHL Network star. Can I call you a star, Thomas Hickey? Joins me now. How are you today, pal?
I'm good. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I'm excited for the one tonight. I mean, you're talking about the Islanders and how are they doing it? I would say they're playing just above average hockey. And in the Eastern Conference playoff race, that gains you a lot of ground. And over the last couple of weeks, went from being, Jeff, they were out of it. You know, I was thinking they need so many things to go right for them and wrong for other teams. And here we are, a third of the way through April. They're not sitting pretty, but they're sitting pretty good.
You know, the one thing, it's interesting comments there too, Thomas. And the one thing that I wonder about too is normally towards the end of the season when you have teams kind of going backwards and a couple trying to get a playoff spot and nobody really wants it. And, you know, management decides, okay, at the end of the season, we need to do this. And then you have a team like the Islanders start to go on a little bit of a run. Do you think that, you know, regardless of what happens, they make it in, they don't make it in, they do something in the playoffs, they don't do something in the playoffs. Do you think that it changes anything? Like, do you think that it changes, like they can appreciably outside of, you know, crazy winning the Stanley Cup, is there anything they can do to make management change their minds about what to do with this team in the offseason, or have all of those decisions kind of already been made?
I wish I knew. You know, obviously Lou Lamoriello, you know, he's been in charge of this for a while. And I think the biggest thing that you hear from Lou time after time, especially when people question him, it's that he believes in this group, right? So he's doubled down on that for about 3 years in a row, and he has added pieces. You know, Horvat, it just ages so well. Yep. That was a terrific trade for him. But you look at the group and you just, you know, you look at them and you got to think logically. You know, a year older, guys are into their 30s, creeping to mid-30s. Are they going to get faster? Are they going to get more coordinated? Are they going to get more skilled? They're not, right? So I don't think this New York Islanders fan base wants to clench their teeth and try to hold on to make it to that playoff line and need things to go really well year after year after year. But there's a great nucleus when you think of the stars of this hockey club and some of the guys that are on long-term contracts. But I do, Jeff, think that it will be reevaluated, because when I watch the team play, the one thing you can't take away from them is the commitment that they've shown and the little intangibles that the New York Islanders have had for well over a decade now, and some of those pieces that make it work. At the same time, I think there's a realization, at least from my eye, that this group has lost a bit of a step collectively, a little bit slower, and the game's just getting faster. But I've been impressed with the way they've binded together and you know, moved up in the standings over the last little bit.
Should Bo Horvat and Matt Barzal ever be separated again?
No, not in my mind. Look, you know, covering the team, Patrick Waugh, he's done a lot of interesting stuff and he's pushed a lot of the right buttons, you know, and a big part of that has been putting Horvat and Barzal back together. He had Barzal on his own. He was playing with Fasching and Cizikas, and credit to those guys, but they don't finish like Bo Horvat. They don't play, you know, at a level that gets Matt Barzal the puck back like Bo Horvat does. And they were both cold. Horvat was cold. Barzal was cold. I think they were generating. It just wasn't the right fit for 18 seconds. Three games ago, they got put back together and they scored in that 18 seconds. And since then, they've been together. They're so good together and they're just continuing to get better. It's only been a year that really they've been running together. Matt Barzal was hurt a bunch last year too. So they continue to grow together, but always looking for each other. And I think you need that speed and someone that understands the way Matt Barzal plays. And Horvat's been that guy since he got here. So I love to see him together. And I think this team is different when they're not.
What did you make that last game? Not the game itself, but the Zibanejad-Pellick collision and the description of it by Peter Laviolette. I believe he referred to it as, I think it was vicious.
Vicious was
shoulder elbow. Yeah, the vicious shoulder elbow. To me, it looked like two guys that were looking in different directions, and Pellick never moved his feet or changed the angle of his body, and Zibanejad just kind of ran into that vicious shoulder elbow. Did you have a thought on that one?
I do. And look, Peter Laviolette, a ton of respect. You look at the amount of games he's coached, the amount of games he's won. What I said after the game, after I heard those comments, was I'd be interested to hear if he felt the same way in the morning when you take the emotion out of it. But I was right there. I think I was closer than anyone, including the guys on the ice. I saw the tail end of it, right? And I saw Zibanejad, and it made me sick looking at him trying to get to the bench. I thought he was okay, and then he wasn't. Yeah. And I looked at Adam Pellick immediately, and he had no idea that that could happen. I think Pellick could have been in just as bad of shape or worse than Zibanejad had that collision gone a different way, but it was completely accidental. I have zero doubt in my mind, and I know there was a bunch of Rangers fans that would tell me differently, but you watch that clip as many times as you want, Jeff, and know Adam Pellick like I do. Look, that was not intentional one bit. It was really unfortunate, and that's the biggest thing. I hope Zibanejad's going to be okay.
Yeah, and the thing that I keep coming back to as well with Adam Pellick, here's someone that's had, like, what is it, like four concussions in a year. Like, if anyone's sensitive, not just to his opponent, but also to his own head, he's not going to put himself in that position. And again, to the point that I made earlier, the feet don't change, the angle doesn't, like, nothing changes on Pellick. He's just looking forward. Zibanejad runs into him.
The other part about Pellick, too, like, the thing about him is people go, well, why would he hold his stick like that and his elbows like that? Maybe he was intentional. Watch him play hockey, iso cam him on the ice. He's a peculiar player. Yeah. He's strange. He's got a unique style. he doesn't do what most people do. So I think people get caught up in that, but you know, I won't keep on defending it because to me, there's really nothing to defend there.
You know, if at the beginning of the year, we sort of described this scenario for the New York Islanders and said, and it's their goaltender that's going to get them there, we would have all assumed we'd be talking about Ilya Samsonov, but instead, or not Ilya, Ilya Sorokin. Instead, we're talking about Semyon Varlamov, are we not?
Yeah, he's been, you know, I was just thinking about it the other day. He might be the MVP, not in the sense that his numbers are great, not in the sense that he has a ton of wins. It's the timing. And if you look back to when Semyon Varlamov was hurt earlier on in the season, they had to ride Ilya Sorokin. They didn't have three goalies. No one else played other than Ilya over that stretch. And I think maybe those minutes caught up to him. He doesn't look the same this year. He's been leaky. I think maybe he's been a little bit overworked. But in comes Semyon Varlamov. And don't forget that Patrick Waugh has a history with Varlamov. He won the Jack Adams when he had him as a goalie. So he knows him and he trusts him. And Varlamov started three games in a row. It hadn't happened for two full years when Sorokin was healthy, and that happened. And he won all three of them. And, you know, his last one in that sequence against Nashville, a 40-save shutout, was maybe the best game he's played as a New York Islander. He's just been, he's been awesome. And that dynamic is so healthy between the two of the guys because they're best friends. You know, I get to see Varlamov make the save and Sorokin on his feet right next to me cheering because they have that relationship with one another, and it's not really competitive at all, but Varlamov's been the guy. And, you know, I wouldn't doubt you see him in the most important games like he was against the Rangers last game, but it gives Ilya Sorokin some time to rest, get his head right too. And although the season hasn't gone good for him, he's still one of the best goaltenders in the world, and, you know, he's capable of finding that level at any moment. But while he does, Semyon Varlamov's been so technically sound and so calm that it just rubbed off on the team.
You mentioned the relationship between Patrick Waugh and Semyon Varlamov, which, as you mentioned, goes back to the Colorado Avalanche and the Jack Adams Trophy. What have you learned about Patrick Waugh this year? Like, what sort of... Because, I mean, it's impossible not to have an opinion on Patrick Waugh. Like, just his presence and his actions and how he thinks and how he speaks and how he behaves and what he does, like, you're just forced into having an opinion. There's no one who kind of looks at Patrick Waugh and goes, meh, don't really have a thought. What preconceived notions did you maybe have about Patrick Waugh, and how do you feel about him now?
My preconceived notions would be that he would get caught up in his emotions and maybe that would get the better of him. And I'm just strictly going back to the fire you saw in his eyes when he was playing and maybe the way things went in Colorado of, you know, maybe living and dying with your emotions. He's been really positive to this group after every game, after the bad losses, after the good wins. He's continued to be positive, but his emotion is still there. I just don't think it gets the better of him, and it doesn't, the bad parts of it, perhaps, that maybe are things that he worked on, it doesn't rub off on his team. They're not an overly emotional group, but I think it comes back to them and the commitment that they have, because the passion that it looks like he coaches with, the passion you see in his eyes, it's translated into really committed hockey. And this group of Islanders, I said they played pretty good, but they've been extremely committed as far as the type of hockey that they're playing. So I think that's really rubbed off on his group, just how much emotion that he has just comes out in the commitment that the players show to that.
You know, Islanders fans are some of the more intriguing fans around the NHL, and they seem to have this love-hate relationship with their hockey team. Like, there's one Islanders fan that I know that either goes to or watches every single game, and I get an update after every single game from this person. And it's usually a variation on, I love this team or I hate this team. And after the last win, I got, oh man, this team is the best. I love this team. And I texted back, no, you hate this team. And he sends back, nah, you're right. I hate this team. But I love this team right now, but I hate this team. Where are Islanders fans on this team right now? Where are they at?
Right now, they love them. But they're justified at the times when it seems like it's a yo-yo season. And Jeff, this is tough for me. This is my second year out of the game and in an analyst position. And last year, went through the course of 82 games. And, you know, I keep my approach from my playing days that you don't get too high, you don't get too low. The season's never over at any point until game 82 rolls around. And last year, you know, it sort of felt like that. This year, the contrast in how good they can be and how bad they can be, how inconsistent this group can be. I had to ask Butch Gore, I had to ask Brendan Burke, I had to ask people on our broadcast to say, am I gauging this correctly, the highs and lows? It seems like this is a roller coaster compared to last year. And I think they all agreed that this year has been particularly strange. And I think that's why the fans can go from loving the team and thinking they're capable of so much to going, what do you mean? There's no chance we're going to make the playoffs. But at the end of the day, you wait till 82 games. And if you're in, you did earn it. But I think it's been more volatile than any season in the past. And that's difficult on fans that have a history of winning and have a history of consistency, because this group's been different. But credit to the guys for finding a way, because when you're inside that dressing room, it's just day by day. And you get to April 17th and see what position you're in. And if you made the playoffs, nice job.
I always tell my buddy, he's like a toilet seat at a Stag and Doe, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Holy smokes, how do you live like that? Thomas, thanks as always for stopping by. Enjoy the game tonight. It's the Islanders, the playoff-bound Islanders, we suspect, facing off against the Montreal Canadiens. Thanks, pal. You be well.
Thanks. You guys, too. Take care.
All right, Thomas Hickey, Islanders analyst, also from the NHL Network as well. Islanders have won 5 straight games. Big one tonight. Montreal Canadiens looking to cement, waiting for the concrete to harden around that third spot in the Metropolitan Division. And interesting thoughts on the vicious shoulder elbow. Maddie, how did you refer to that the other day? Not the shoulder elbow. What was it?
The shelbo.
Shelbo?
Yep, the shelbo.
The shelbo.
By the way, also you have now put the curse on the New York Islanders, because remember when we were talking about the Philadelphia Flyers a couple weeks ago and the schedule is not so good, and Islanders fans are going to be in your mentions, specifically one probably, because I know he listens to the show. Your pal, Mr. Liebhoff, there will certainly be in your mentions. If they collapse here.
Liebhoff lives in the big Lebowski. He lives and dies. sports gamblers know all about Liebhoff. He lives and dies with this team, and I love that guy. I got all day. He's one of the. I don't know if you've ever met him before. I talked to him. He's one of the legit funniest guys. You will ever meet. Great dude. All right, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. 10 games to choose from, Maddie. Where are you?
I'm going with the one that has some Eastern Conference wild card vibes to it, and it does indirectly, kind of does directly affect the Islanders as well. It's the Red Wings at the Penguins. Puck line is Penguins -1.5. The Penguins are 8-4 straight up in their last 12 against Detroit, and 15-5 straight up in their last 20 at home against Detroit. The over has hit in 6 of the last 7 between these two teams.
Pens coming off a loss, overtime. They picked up a single point loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Wings coming off a very disappointing loss at the hands of the Washington Capitals. Pittsburgh Penguins, by the way, as bizarre a season as it's been for Pittsburgh, when it comes to faceoffs, they are the number one team in the NHL at 54.8%. They're number one in something. And Sidney Crosby's number one in a lot of people's books. And Sidney Crosby is still continuing to carve out a Hall of Fame career. And if somehow he can get this team into the postseason, again, include that man in your Hart Trophy considerations. Two teams on the outside looking in, both at 84 points. And when it comes to the tiebreaker, the Pittsburgh Penguins have it by regulation wins. The Penguins have 31. The Detroit Red Wings have 27. There's two ways for the Pittsburgh Penguins to make it in the postseason, as Maddie mentions, either wild card 2 or the Islanders spot right now at 3rd in the Metropolitan. For the Detroit Red Wings, rather, there's only one way, and that is WC2. Now, both teams have 4 games remaining in their schedule. They face off against each other this evening. For the Penguins, it is Boston, Nashville, and they'll finish up against the Islanders. For Detroit, after tonight's matchup, it is Toronto, Montreal, and then Montreal again, a home and home there. Alek Nedeljkovic starts again, his 10th start in a row for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Two desperate teams going at it tonight. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. When we come back, we're back on the Salt Lake City, Utah / Arizona story. Gordon Monson from Salt Lake Tribune will stop by the appetite for hockey in Utah. And also, we'll talk to Anton Thun on what does all of this mean for the players, either the NHLers that are going to be on the move or the ones that have, I don't know, Arizona on their no-trade lists. Does it just transfer now? Hour 2 is coming up. Also, Charlie O'Connor on the Philadelphia Flyers. Big hour coming up. Keep it here.
Everything Raptors before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. A couple of things here. In Utica, Women's World Championships quarterfinals. Finland has beaten Switzerland 3-1, still to come. Czechia and Germany. The United States face off against Japan, Canada later on tonight. We'll take on Sweden. The Frozen Four in St. Paul, Minnesota features the four highest scoring teams in the country, BC, BU, Michigan, and Denver. Denver faces off against BU. Michigan takes on Boston College. That is, as we say, the latest. And the latest around the NHL is what many are saying and describing as the impending move from Arizona to Utah of the Coyotes, to Salt Lake City specifically. In Hour 1, you heard part of the interview that Elliot and I did with Ryan Smith, who's the prospective new owner of the new NHL team in Utah, of course, owns the Utah Jazz as well. And a really interesting piece I encourage all of you to go in and check out and have a read at the Salt Lake Tribune. And it's all about, you know, how people who live in Utah, if you want hockey, you'll love it. Gordon Monson wrote this one. He joins me now to talk about the appetite for hockey in Salt Lake City, the appetite for hockey in Utah. And we'll probably get in a little bit here into how this will work and maybe a little bit more on Ryan Smith, too. So let's bring aboard Gordon Monson from the Salt Lake Tribune. Gordon, it's Jeff Merrick here. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Jeff? Good to be with you.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. First of all, I really enjoyed your piece that came out the other day about, you know, hockey going from Arizona to Utah. And as the days go by here, I know there's still some details to work out. And the language around all of it is sensitive and things can go off the rails at any time. But, you know, this is something that Ryan Smith has coveted for a long time. He's grown up playing roller hockey. Very successful businessman, very successful sports owner with the Utah Jazz as well. When did you first start hearing about his interest in hockey? I want to get to the market here in a second, Gordon, but when did you first start hearing that Ryan Smith was looking to add to his sports portfolio?
I think it was about a year ago, and Ryan Smith, you got Ryan Smith right. I mean, he's nobody's idiot. I mean, to accomplish what he's achieved at a relatively young age, yeah. He knows what he's doing, and he does his research, and he's, I don't know, although a lot of people aren't here to complain about what's been going on with the Utah Jazz, if you're much of a basketball fan, you know that the Jazz, well, what's the best way to say it? They've sucked of late, and he's in charge of that outfit, so we'll see how he is at hockey. But he's really motivated to do this. He's got deep pockets. And it looks as though he's pushing hard for this. Although he said he didn't want to steal anybody else's team away. But if that team is crumbling where it is and they can't get an arena down there, then maybe he feels like he's doing somebody a favor. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's, you know, I do a podcast with Elliot Friedman. It's called 32 Thoughts, and he was on it with us last year. And one of the things that he mentioned was it didn't matter whether it was expansion or if it was relocation. In his words, I want the NHL to know that I am here, I am interested, I am here to help. And the one thing that I really do wonder about, too, is, you know, Ryan Smith is young. He's energetic. As you mentioned, he has deep pockets, a lot of different ideas. And the one thing about, you know, about sports ownership, it tends to be a lot of older people. You know, here's Ryan Smith, you younger guy, big ideas, all of it. And I can't help but thinking whether you're, you know, the NBA or Major League Baseball or NFL, whomever, or in this case, the NHL, That's someone that you want. Like, you want to have people with those types of ideas and energy around your leagues. You know, you said he doesn't suffer fools gladly, a really intelligent guy. Like, what else do you think we should know about Ryan Smith?
Well, one thing that people around here like about him, and I don't know if this matters on a national scale or not, is that he's a Utah guy. I mean, born and raised here. Yeah. So if he brings a franchise here, it's not to bounce it somewhere else. It's with the full intention of moving forward and doing it right. And he's already got approval from the Utah Senate as far as public money to help him build a new arena and develop, you know, the projects that are so in vogue now. When you build a new arena, you got to have everything around it. And they seem to be, as far as the government here goes, they seem to be all for it. And so he's got that going for him as well.
What can you tell us about, because listen, we're looking at this, you know, happening as early as next season. What can you tell us about the Delta Center, you know, outside of any new, you know, arena and entertainment project? And we're always told the money's in the dirt. But what can you tell us about what would be a temporary home, at least until a more permanent one comes along, which would house, we suspect, both the NHL and NBA organization? What should we know about the Delta Center?
The Delta Center is one of the best basketball arenas in the world. I mean, as far as the crowd is on top of the court, and it's Larry Miller, the former owner of the Jazz, he built it that way because that was his baby. Mm-hmm. And there was a minor league team here that suffered when the Delta Center went up because the sight lines are not particularly good. And you have some hardcore hockey fans here who were really upset when they built the Delta Center because it favored basketball. And that certainly didn't help keeping folks interested in the sport here. Although there are a lot of hockey fans here. And this community, I don't want to sound like I'm on the freaking Chamber of Commerce here, but the place is growing like crazy. I mean, corporate dollars, population is exploding along the Wasatch Front. Some people have wondered, because they're trying to get Major League Baseball here too, and people have wondered, wait a second, Okay, you got the Jazz, you got Real Salt Lake, the MLS team here already. Now you're talking about bringing an NHL team in and Major League Baseball. Are the basic underpinnings there to support all this? And I think the answer to that question is yes. This market is ready for it. And look, I got to admit, I'm somewhat biased because, I mean, I grew up, and don't hold this against me, but I grew up a Philadelphia Flyers fan about 20 miles south of Philly. And the Broad Street Bullies were a passion of mine.
Yeah.
So much so. And I think that this will happen here. This will happen here as well. As the Flyers got better, young people around Philly went crazy for that team. Everybody started playing hockey, playing ice hockey, playing floor hockey, playing street hockey. And I think that would happen here as well. There's just something about having the top level of sport in your city. And for Salt Lake City, they've never had that. They just had minor league hockey. Although during the 2002 Olympics, the hockey excitement was pretty high.
Well, as a Canadian, that was a very special venue in a very special place in a very special year and a very special gold medal for the hockey team. Canadians look fondly on Salt Lake City, as I'm sure you know. But, you know, it is interesting. You mentioned the Philadelphia Flyers, and I'm not going to try to draw too straight a line here between someone like Ed Snyder, who owned who owned the Philadelphia Flyers, and Ryan Smith. But, you know, one of the similarities here, you know, we're in an era right now where it's not family owned anymore. Like, you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, for example, like in the state, you know, that's the first non-family owned organization that owns the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, everything else, so Steelers, Pirates, it's all family owned, but that is changing. And it's now corporate entities that own a number of different teams. But this would be a situation, much like your beloved Philadelphia Flyers, and Ed Snyder was one of the great visionaries in hockey. But not just the game itself, but everything surrounding the game, and specifically youth hockey, street hockey, ball hockey. I mean, you know, from growing up around there, how many kids picked up hockey sticks? And a lot of that was because of the work of Ed Snyder. And Ryan Smith, when he was on with us last year, talked about the junior jazz programs and getting basketballs in kids' hands and getting them access to play. I would imagine any initiative that he has for ice hockey, albeit it would be more expensive, would involve getting hockey sticks in kids' hands, more sheets of ice available, getting kids on the ice, or just getting kids to play the game. I would have to consider that, much like Snyder, who you talk about with the Philadelphia Flyers, I would imagine that Ryan Smith would do the same thing in Utah.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And look, you're talking about the Flyers. Suddenly I'm thinking of Bobby Clark and Bertie Parent and Rick McLeish and Dave the Hammer Schultz. I'm getting excited here. But yeah, I think the effect is there. And I don't know if you know about the demographics in Salt Lake City and all of Utah, really. But it's a young, young demographic. There are a lot of kids here. And a lot of them are eager for things, you know, cool things to do. And as far as I'm concerned, there's not a whole lot that's cooler than hockey.
Yeah, it's this one looks like it's as close to being done. And this Arizona Coyotes saga goes back to 2009 with Jerry Moyes throwing the keys on the table and getting into court with Judge Redfield. T-bomb's been going on for a long time. But now it does seem as if it's closer than ever that that saga is coming to a close and this thing will eventualize in Salt Lake City. Listen, I encourage people to go read your piece at the Salt Lake Tribune. Gordon, thanks so much for stopping by today. I don't think this is the last time we're going to call on you, especially now that we know you're an old Flyers fan.
Well, I'll be happy to talk hockey whenever you feel like it. As I said, it's a great sport, and people here, I think, are pretty charged up about the possibility of being able to see these teams at the top level come in and do their thing. Yes. I mean, great athletes playing a great sport.
Yep. We're with you. Gordon, thanks so much for stopping by. We'll give Gordon another call as this story continues, and Gordon's on top of it at the Salt Lake Tribune. His piece that goes back to April the 6th is available online, slrtrib.com. Go to the sports section there, Gordon Monson's piece, which is all about, and I'll read you the headline: if Ryan Smith gets the Coyotes or an expansion team, you'll fall hard for hockey. You know, it's an intriguing market because, as Gordon mentioned, there's been a lot of minor hockey operators there, whether it's the ECHL, the IHL. I still think, you know, fondly of the Salt Lake Golden Eagles, who were there for a number of years, minor league partners with, you know, the California Seals and the Boston Bruins, et cetera, for so many years. So it's not as if you're going into a completely virgin market, right? Like, there are hockey fans that are there. So maybe you need a little bit of an update or education for a lot of newer hockey fans on what this thing is all about. But I don't think it's going to be like when the Toronto Toros went to Birmingham, Alabama. And that was a completely brand new market. You know, I can recall talking to their old play-by-play voice and saying, you know, what did people like about it? Like, hockey goes from Toronto, this big hotbed, to Birmingham. What was most attractive? And the response I got opened my eyes. The response was, well, because I thought he was going to say, you know, bench clearing brawls and back scratch and slap shots and the guys in the 70s with the wild hair and all of it. He said line changes. I said, what? He said line changes. He said, think about it. In all the sports that we watch, no one changes while the game is going on. No one in basketball changes while the game is going on. No one in baseball changes while the game is going on. Football, while the game is going on. But this was the first time we saw a sport that did that. And he said, like, when we had wholesale line changes, whoop, the place went crazy. What are they doing? What are they doing? And then, bam, five more come on, all in perfect formation. Anyhow, thanks to Gordon for stopping by the program. In the meantime, we're going to stay on this story, and I'm glad to welcome Anton Thun to the broadcast. Anton is no stranger to these airwaves. I still maintain some of the best primetime sports shows involved Anton Thun, former agent, still a consultant with Cortex. He joins me now to talk about this scenario and also – sort of peek behind the curtain of what happens with a player when a team relocates. In this case, we could focus on Brian Little, one of Anton's former clients who went from Atlanta to Winnipeg. Anton, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Jeff. My pleasure.
So when you first started to hear that this is like every day that goes on here, Anton, this seems to be sort of marching towards a sort of inevitability or an eventuality that we thought we would get to. We just didn't know when. I've heard you talk. I mentioned your appearances on Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan for so many years, and those were delightful shows. And love listening to you and Bob go back and forth on various things, usually around lockout time. But when you first started to hear this story, and this goes back to 2009 with Jerry Moyes, what have you thought about it recently? As it seems now, we're closer than ever to this saga in the desert being over.
Well, I think we've got a situation, Jeff, that, as you mentioned just right now, it's been ongoing since 2009. And it's a saga that seems to be the never-ending story in the National Hockey League about the viability of a franchise in Phoenix and the facilities that they're playing in and so on and so forth. And obviously, recently, the Gila River Authority Arena decided not to lease out their rink to the Arizona Coyotes, and they were unfortunately stuck playing in the Mullet, which they still can't sell out. And all of these things are problematic to the National Hockey League, especially when you have revenue sharing in the league, when you have revenue sharing between the owners and the players in terms of HRR, and you're playing in a 4,500-seat building that doesn't sell out.
Yeah, you know, with a lot of authority, you can speak here on the player's behalf, being an agent for as long as you were. We all know that this hasn't been an ideal situation for players. That's the obvious statement. But again, it's still an NHL paycheck. It's not an NHL arena. But from the players that you've spoken to, maybe players you've represented in the past that you've spoken to, how have they felt about whether, you know, take your pick of venues where the team has played, how have they felt about playing in Arizona?
Well, I think there's a huge difference between the personal feeling and the business feeling. The personal feeling is every player that plays in Arizona loves to be in that city, right? It's a great place to play. It's no different than the feeling that athletes who play with the Florida Panthers or the Tampa Bay Lightning have. They love to go play in that city. They love to come out of the rink wearing flip-flops. They love to be able to go golf as opposed to being stuck in a snowstorm. That's the personal life. And their families love it, okay? I doubt that there's a single wife of a player in Arizona that doesn't want to be in Arizona. The problem is, from a business standpoint, you have 31 partners outside of Arizona, and you probably have 750 players outside of Arizona that understand that they're in a business world, and that the limitations that Arizona brings, both in terms of the lack of attendance in the former arena and the lack of attendance and the limitations on revenue generation in Mullet that currently exist. And that's the problem.
Let me try to personalize this for you. You've represented players that have had teams that have pulled up stakes and left. And I think of Brian Little specifically, who was with that Atlanta Thrashers team that moved to Winnipeg. And that all happened, you know, quite quickly and suddenly for a lot of people. I mean, we all know about the ownership structure with the old Atlanta Thrashers and how, A, they were more interested in basketball, and B, they were dysfunctional, to say the least, and couldn't get along and eventually just threw the keys on the table. First of all, what do you remember from that time in hockey? And what was the transition like for your client, Brian Little, going from one market to another, seemingly overnight?
Sure. Well, the situation in Atlanta was a long time coming, just as this is. I don't think anybody that was involved in the business of hockey was totally surprised or caught off guard by the Atlanta franchise throwing in the keys based on the lack of interest that the ownership group had in really developing a strong franchise. The franchise was weak. They had weak attendance, and the ownership didn't support it very well. The transition to Winnipeg took place, I guess, from a public standpoint, very quickly. But I think it had been long planned out because the Winnipeg ownership group had dibs at different mm-hmm. points in time on the then current problematic Phoenix franchise. So they were fully prepared to move. In terms of the players, I can tell you, and I've said this to you before, Brian Little was the easiest client to represent, and probably from the standpoint of management, one of the easiest players to coach or be the general manager. If you dropped the puck at the North Pole and told him that his team was playing tonight at 8 p.m., he'd ask how to get there, and he'd be ready to take the faceoff.
Yeah.
So for Brian in particular, especially being a young player at the time, Jeff, it was very simple. It was, hey, wherever the team is, I'm going. The difficulty that exists with other players, especially the older players, is now you have families. You have a wife. Oftentimes you have children. They are in schools. They've been in the same school for a particular period of time. It could be years, and they've developed friendships. That's problematic. When you have a situation like this or the Atlanta Thrashers moving, you also have players who have signed with that club intentionally believing that their no trade clause or no movement clause will be effective and that they will continue to play out the rest of their career in Phoenix. That said, the Phoenix franchise has players that are very, very young. So there's very few players on long-term deals who made commitments to the city of Phoenix rather than a short-term deal to the Arizona Coyotes. But that's a huge issue. And if you were let's say you were John Tavares leaving the Islanders, and you just signed a 7-year deal with a no-movement clause, and you're playing, you decided to sign with the Phoenix Coyotes. And 2 years in, all of a sudden you're told, well, we're not playing in Phoenix anymore. We're going to Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very different situation from a 30-year-old.
Well, it is, and I wonder how much leverage, and I guess the answer is really none other than, you know, you can sort of dictate where you want to go by way of your no move or no trade clause. But I would imagine in a lot of situations, players would say, like I think of Clayton Keller, and I think of Nick Schmaltz, and I think of players that have signed, you know, long term, believing that, okay, we can plant some roots here, we can raise a family here, and now all of a sudden this organization is moving to Utah. But the one thing that I keep, like, I wonder about those players and how many of them, you know, go to Bill Armstrong and say, like, you know, this isn't what we agreed to. I would like to request a trade. Whether they're amenable to that, who knows? We'll see what happens. But the one thing that I do wonder about, like, we started this entire conversation by talking about this is a saga that's gone back to 2009, Jerry Moyes and Court and Judge Redfield T-Bomb, who is now retired and no longer part of any of this, and bankruptcy, et cetera, and various owners coming in and trying to save the franchise, and the NHL running it, and the NHL funding it, to now where we're at right now. The one thing that I keep coming back to is, considering it's been this long, Anton, from a player's point of view, and certainly they're always, you know, guided and educated by their representatives, nobody signs with the Arizona Coyotes, I believe, with their eyes closed. Like, when you sign with Arizona, has there not always been the sort of the possibility that this might happen?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. This has been a disaster waiting to happen for a long time. And the only issue was, at what point in time is there enough pressure on the National Hockey League office in New York City to pull the plug? Mm-hmm. And we obviously got to that point in time.
Did you ever have clients that, you know, had received offers from the Arizona Coyotes? And if so, did you ever encourage them maybe to look elsewhere?
No. You know what? I've never been in that situation where the Coyotes were an option. I hate to say this because Bill Armstrong, who's a former client of mine, is obviously the general manager of the Coyotes. But you know, once free agency came about on July 1st, for the most part, the Coyotes were not at the top of the list of any team at that point in time, or any player at that point in time, as being the team that they were going to. And I think, as you can see, the players that they've re-signed have been their own players, and you know, a variety of other, perhaps without disrespecting anybody, second level players who are good, competent hockey players that perhaps had limited options, especially over the last few seasons where the cap did not go up, and the ability to get a good contract was very, very limited. And, you know, last summer, you had players that that signed there. You know, one example might be Matthew Dumba, who got a one-year contract in Arizona at a substantial number. And I would guess that he took that because the other options were limited for him because of the cap situation.
Let me ask you about Bill Armstrong as well. I think he has one of, if not maybe the most difficult general manager position in the entire NHL. Like I look at even, you know, at trade deadline, the moves that he made, the returns were not great. And that's mainly because he was not in a position to retain on any salary. Like, I'm sure that whether it was, you know, the Jason Zucker deal for one, or any other deals that he made, I'm sure that Bill would have loved to say, yeah, you know what, we'll eat half and we'll take a second round pick in return, thank you very much. But because Arizona was not in a position to retain on any salary, and we understand why, Bill Armstrong wasn't able to do deals and maximize the compensation coming back. I've always felt that he's kind of, you know, skating with one leg tied behind his other leg here. What was he like as a client? Give us the update on Bill Armstrong as a client.
Oh, Bill was a great client. Again, he was a low maintenance guy. Bill was not the Connor McDavid of his generation, to put it lightly. He was a big 6'4" tough defenseman that always came to play. Probably today you might compare him, although he never got to the NHL in this way, to defensemen like Joel Edmondson, who's a big body who plays tough in front of the net. And back in those days, you could really play tough in front of the net, and you could play tough in the corners, and he knew how to fight, and he wasn't afraid to do it. And so he plied his trade in the minors, always a great client. He's still a very good and close friend. And we talk from time to time, and, you know, I try to throw advice his way and he refuses to take any of it as usual, but that's life in the fast lane, Jeff. He's a good person. And, does he have his hands tied behind his back? Yeah. Without commenting on anything, that's private. So of course he does. You know, when you're basically playing with a cap that is the lower limit as opposed to the other teams that are trying to get above the upper limit by using LTIR, they're using LTIR to get to the lower limit so that they can limit their losses. But having said that, if you look at their roster, they've got a very talented group of young players. And if you look at their farm system in Tucson, they've got some very good young players there. And without promoting Army too much more, the prospects that they have playing in Europe at this point in time, including 6'8" and 6'7" and 6'5" Russians, are pretty good. So if they do the right things and if they happen to get to Salt Lake City and they have an owner who's willing to participate in spending a lot more money than they have recently, that's going to be a damn good franchise in the next few years.
One of the great things, I've only got a couple of minutes left with you here. One of the great things about talking to you, Anton, I've always felt this way, is you do a good job of big picture. You do a really good job of, you know, pull back, blow out, you know, have a look at the entire snapshot here. And right now there's the NHL and the situation with Arizona/Utah. There's also a lot of noise coming from Atlanta, and Tillman Fertitta recently this week said, when asked about an NHL team in Houston, he said, "I'm working on it." So there's that. Plus, there's an international calendar, whether it's, you know, what the NHL is, you know, going to call something along the lines of frozen face-off, is going to be like a World Cup or something like that. Plus, participation in the Olympics. They're finally looking to have a robust and consistent international calendar. Also, There's the expiration of the CBA coming up, as loath as I am to mention that, coming up in a couple of seasons as well. Can you give us your take, if you froze the NHL right now, how do you see it, and how would you describe it?
Well, I think it's a league that is vibrant in terms of the game that's being played. It's got as much talent in the league as there's ever been. If you look at the abilities of the young players in the league, they are off the charts. And as you know, watching minor hockey, the abilities of the 15 and 16 and 17 year olds that are looking to get there over the next few years is scary good. And it's not only that in Ontario, but especially in the United States, where hockey is growing by leaps and bounds, and there's more and more Europeans that are now participating, more European countries. So in terms of the talent level, it is an exciting sport. In terms of the business opportunities, I think that those are growing. I think that the NHL is finally waking up in terms of how it is promoting its players rather than promoting the teams. Because it's a player-driven industry, any sport is. It doesn't matter whether it's tennis or golf with Tiger Woods or whether it's basketball with LeBron James or football with Tom Brady. It's the players that people want to go see. And, yes, there's some loyalty to a uniform, but it's really the players in North America, perhaps different a little bit than in Europe. The one thing I think that the league still needs to do a better job of, short-term and long-term, is developing revenue streams from Europe. It's got one third of the league talent pool, and a lot of them are exceptional athletes that the league has done a terrible job over the last 50 years developing pipelines of money coming out of Europe, and they need to do that better.
Excellent comments, as always. Anton, thanks, as always, for stopping by. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much for sharing your insight, your expertise as well. We'll be, these stories aren't going away. We'll be calling on you again.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. Take care. Bye-bye.
There he is, Anton Thun, Cortex Management Executive Consultant, former NHL agent, and someone who's always interested in a conversation about hockey at various levels. Anton is always, like, he's kind of what we refer to in the industry as a producer's dream. A lot of experience, delivers well, has a great perspective, and sees the game itself from a lot of different angles. Has a sort of, you know, if you're a film buff, it's a Rashomon, like different perspectives from all around, or a 360 view, you can describe it as well. That's always been Anton, and we thank him for his time and coming on today, and he'll be on again, I'm sure, sooner than later. We should always look to get Anton here on this program. Okay, thanks to Anton Thun and to Gordon Monson there. We talked about the situation between Arizona and Salt Lake City from the players' point of view, from the Salt Lake City point of view. We covered off a lot of it in the first hour as well. Elliot and I will do a podcast later on tonight that'll be available tomorrow morning. We'll get more into the situation and try to move the story a little bit more, and we'll continue to do so here on this program tomorrow. In the meantime, we'll pause. We'll come back with Charlie O'Connor and talk about one of our favorite topics that continues to remain vibrant and continues to be a headline maker, and that is the Philadelphia Flyers, who are in action tonight against the New York Rangers. And even though John Tortorella most recently said that Sammy Ersson is exhausted, he starts tonight for Orange. Charlie O'Connor from The Athletic on the Philadelphia Flyers in moments across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360. It's the Merrick Show. Back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And this segment of the Jeff Merrick Show is brought to you by Hyundai. Welcome back to the program. Please be joined now by Charlie O'Connor. We're talking about the Philadelphia Flyers because we can't, Charlie, stop talking about the Philadelphia Flyers. I would imagine, and welcome to the program once again, Charlie from The Athletic. I would imagine the mantra around Philadelphia right now is stop the bleeding. How would you describe Philly right now?
Yeah, I think everybody's just kind of in shock as to how quickly this whole thing fell apart. You know, 2 weeks ago, I'm in New York right now. The Flyers are playing the Rangers tonight, but it was not that long ago that I was in New York and the Flyers did lose to the Rangers in that game, but it was a thriller. It was an overtime thriller, and it was the final game of, you know, what had been called the gauntlet. It was a 7-game run against pretty much every single elite Eastern Conference team. The Flyers survived it. Did they come out unscathed? No. Mm-hmm. They lost the majority of the games, but they were still in a playoff spot. They hung on. They squeezed some points out of it. And then the schedule opened back up, and you were thinking, okay, they play Montreal, they play Chicago, they play Buffalo, they play Columbus. These are games the Flyers should win. And instead, they've lost them all. It's been wild to see this team, after being able to deal with so many challenges this year, that this really was the last part of it. Beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And not only have they lost these games, especially the last two against Columbus and Montreal, it's been in blowout fashion. And it really just has everyone you know, around the team and fans of the team just wondering what happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us have theories, but you're right. Specifically, you know, it's one thing to lose to the Islanders 4-3 in overtime, get doubled up by the Sabres 4-2. Okay. But then to your point, 6-2 to Columbus, 9-3 to the Montreal Canadiens. I think we look at this and wonder, is it a matter of, you know, John Tortorella said the goaltender's exhausted. Maybe the whole team is. And then there's the idea that maybe these players have had enough of John Tortorella. And then there's the idea, and I'm sure you've heard this one plenty of times as well, that the scratching of Sean Couturier really jolted this team, and not in a good way. You know, I've talked a lot about how everyone in that room knows exactly what Sean Couturier went through to get back into the NHL, knows about the surgeries, knows about the suffering and the endurance and everything that Couturier put himself mentally and physically through to get back to the Philadelphia Flyers. And one of the theories is that scratching Sean Couturier was seen as something that John Tortorella should not have even approached. How did you see the Couturier, now that we have, you know, hindsight here on this massive losing streak, how did you see the Couturier scratching? And did you think it would affect the team, if at all, the way that it did?
You know, it's tough because I think there's a lot of things going on here. And do I think that the Couturier scratch has played into it a bit? Sure. I think it's part of it. It's worth remembering, however, that the Couturier scratch happened and the Flyers, the next few games, responded. They started winning again. Yeah. They turned it around briefly. So the timeline doesn't quite line up in terms of it being they scratched Couturier, he scratched Couturier, and then the team revolted on it. Now, could it be part of why things have fallen apart to this degree? Possibly. I mean, I can tell you, I've certainly gotten the impression that, you know, obviously Sean Couturier didn't like it, but I don't think a lot of players in that team liked it either. I think what's happening right now, and this is where maybe this plays into it a little bit, especially over these last two games, this is a Flyers team that has a lot of key players that I think are out of gas. John Tortorella has openly stated he believes he worked Sam Harrison too hard because he didn't have enough faith in the backup goalies. Obviously, after Carter Hart was unavailable, they had to make a decision. They made a decision to ride Harrison. So they've got a goalie who is pretty much on his last legs. They ran the top defensive pair of Cam York and Travis Sanheim into the ground in March when they traded Sean Walker and almost the rest of the entire defense core was injured. I think they overworked Sean Couturier in the first half of the year. So there's a lot of things going on here in terms of guys being tired. However, I do think that this team over the course of the season has generally done a really good job of dealing with adversity. They've been able to shake off bad losses, you know, the Hart situation, the circus around the Cutter Gauthier trade. You know, there have been a lot of things that have popped up that this team has been able to just kind of keep the blinders on and focus on winning. And over these last couple games, they've done the opposite of that. This has been new. The complete and total lack of structure that we saw in the Montreal game, to a lesser extent in the Columbus game. And you do wonder if the Couturier scratch has a little bit to do with it, in the sense that, you know, it's messed with their heads a little bit, just enough where when things go bad, they no longer trust that all of this is going to work out. that instead of sticking with the structure, that maybe there's an element of, well, this isn't working, I'm just going to try to do it all myself, rather than trusting in what the coaches are telling them to do. So I certainly don't think this is a team revolt against John Tortorella. I think the room is too strong where they would be, you know, saying, well, we're just not going to play for this guy, so we're going to lose so we can get him fired. I certainly don't think that's going on. I think they have too much pride, and yeah. I think they're too proud of what they've done this year. But do I think it's possible that it's played into the willingness to deviate from the structure that's got them to this point, especially when they're struggling to score, especially when the goalies are struggling to stop pucks because they're tired or just maybe not ready for NHL play in the case of Ivan Fedotov? Yeah, it certainly could be part of it.
Well, when you look at and we'll stay on John Tortorella here. It's been a very different Tortorella after the Columbus game, after the Montreal Canadiens game. You know, Saturday after getting blown out by Columbus, it was a lot of, we need to stay positive. There's no talk about, like, you know, we need to test these guys and see what we have. This is a peek under the hood in this rebuilding year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a much softer, nicer John Tortorella, and understanding John Tortorella. Like, it's not the fire and brimstone and we got to pound this sword. We got to heat it up and we got to pound it. That's the only way you make things strong. It's a much different tone that Tortorella has struck in the last two games. I mean, listen, you're there to document all of it. What do you make of this sudden turn by John Tortorella?
Yeah, and Torts actually kind of spoke to that this morning. We got him just before the morning skate today in New York, and he, you know, without specifically saying it, he more or less said that he adjusts his message based on his read of the room. And he didn't come out and say it, but my guess is that his read of the room right now is that this room would not respond well to being pushed any more than they already have. And that's a new change, right? Because, you know, obviously the Couturier scratch was pushing the room, was pushing one guy, but it was also pushing the room. But just as recent as last week, he was calling the team soft and saying they have no balls in the media. Like, this was classic John Tortorella. And now he clearly has come to the conclusion that that's not going to help. You know, he could rant and rave and, you know, do a classic Torts press conference after these games, but he's come to the conclusion that pushing them in that way isn't going to help. Now, has he come to that conclusion because he thinks that he's pushed the room too far? He will never admit that, but I certainly think it's a viable theory. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I do. Listen, we've seen coaches run rooms hot. We've seen players run rooms hot, and you can only do that for so long, you know, until you start to alienate certain players. Like, I think of the Winnipeg Jets and how hot they used to run that room and how much of that contributed to Patrick Laine eventually getting moved and saying, like, no more, I can't do this. The one thing that we all sort of wonder about at this point, too, is if at the end of all this, the Philadelphia Flyers find themselves on the outside of the playoff picture looking in, two things. How will they look at year one of the dedicated rebuild, and will there be any repercussions? Like, I always wonder about, you know, right now it's an 8-game losing streak, and this 8-game losing streak is happening at the end of the season. But if you took the 8-game losing streak, Charlie, and put it at the beginning of the season and then had the regular season that they had, we'd be talking about the Philadelphia Flyers in a completely different way. Now, it's the end of the season. The guys are exhausted. The guys are losing. The spotlight is on. Tortorella's doing the Tortorella press conference that is a gift for anyone that works in media. Are there any repercussions for this collapse, or is this just year one of the rebuild?
It's tough to say because we haven't really seen how general manager Danny Briere would respond to a situation like this. Obviously, his first off season was last season, but that was coming after, you know, a year where he was the interim. He was in the organization, but he was the interim GM for like a month and a half before the off season. So this is kind of uncharted territory for Danny. What I can say is, you know, in talking with him, in kind of poking around the organization, I don't get the sense that this is going to lead to a dramatic change of plans or any sort of house cleaning. I think on the whole, they are still happy with how the season went. they believe the team exceeded expectations. They believe the team played hard. I don't think, at least this is the read I've been getting, I don't get the sense that there's any, you know, appetite for pushing towards Al or pushing him up to the front, up to the front office, right, and out of the coaching spot. Like, I don't get that sense. That said, I do think that they will evaluate the season as a whole, and there might be things that they do differently in terms of how they treat certain players, you know, guys who started out strong and finished poorly that, you know, and I'm not saying I hate to single out guys, but like one guy, Joel Farabee had a great first two thirds of the season. He hasn't played well, yep, for the last month and a half. And I think Joel Farabee is a really good player, but you can't evaluate his season and just erase the fact that for the final month and a half of the year, he really didn't produce. Now, does that mean I think they're going to rush to trade him? No, but I don't think he's necessarily as untouchable as he would have been had the season ended at game 65. So I don't think that they're going to take too many, you know, I don't think they're going to look at this and say, all that matters is the 8-game losing streak or however long the losing streak goes at the end, yeah, of the season. But I do think that it would be foolish for them just to brush it aside and say, oh, well, they were tired, it doesn't matter. No, this is all evaluation. This is all information that they can use to decide who should be part of the long-term solution and who shouldn't. And my guess, my educated guess, based on the people I've talked to, is that that's how they're going to be looking at it. So, yes, it matters. No, I don't think it's going to overshadow everything, but you can't erase it either.
Right. Let me finish with you on this one, Charlie. You're uniquely qualified to talk about this, being right there with them. So the Philadelphia Flyers season, there was the Carter Hart situation. There was Cutter Gauthier. There's the Sean Couturier scratch. There's the collapse at the end of the season. There's been a number of different and often remarkable John Tortorella press conferences. Normally during a rebuild, teams like things to be quiet. That has been the opposite of the Philadelphia Flyers season. And I always go back and forth on this, and I'm very much more in the camp of it's Philadelphia. It's a big market in the NHL. It's John Tortorella. It's a big name in hockey. Is it even possible, Charlie, to have a quiet rebuild?
I mean, not in Philadelphia. And I do think there is an element too, and this is just, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia, so I've seen this for my entire life. I don't know if this organization knows how to have a quiet year. And I think there's an element too where they almost like it. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, everything they do is meant to create this sense of,
I agree,
of anything can happen. But I do believe there is a feeling from people in the organization, and a lot of this organization is filled with former players who grew up within the Philadelphia Flyers organization. I do think there is a little bit of a feeling of, you know, diamonds are forged under pressure, and that you have to push these guys, and that you have to be ready for anything. And, you know, sometimes it's out of your control. Sometimes crazy things happen, and Philadelphia, yeah, maybe is a little unlucky in that sense. But look, if you hire John Tortorella, you know what you're signing yourself up for. You know you're signing yourself up, mm-hmm, for a bit of theatrics. You know you're signing yourself up to be the storyline. You know you're signing yourself up for the players to be pushed extremely hard, harder than most, if any, coaches they do. And the Flyers are clearly okay, mm-hmm, with that. And I do think it's a little organizational DNA where the Flyers do believe that. Number one, I think they do like being in the news. They like to be talked about in a positive, yes, way, obviously, but they like, yes, to be talked about. But they also think that the players ultimately will benefit from being challenged and from having to deal with controversy and difficult situations. They think the players will be better for it, and we'll see in the end if they're right. But I do think there's a little bit of an organizational DNA thing here.
That, Charlie, I could not agree with you more. And I think that all that goes all the way back to Fred Shiro, who said to Dave Schultz, if you don't like being criticized, say nothing, do nothing, be nothing. That still exists amongst the Philadelphia Flyers at a lot of different levels. Enjoy the game tonight. Thanks, as always, for stopping by and sharing your expertise. Charlie, I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Jeff.
There he is. Charlie O'Connor covers the Philadelphia Flyers for The Athletic. Tonight, they'll look to end their 8-game losing streak. That's seen them plummet. Just when you thought that, Philadelphia Flyers, what a great story. They're tucked away. They're going to make the postseason. Whatever they do, it's all gravy. That's great. They now find themselves on the outside looking in with 3 games remaining. And you look at it and say, if they have a chance, they're going to have to win out, right? They got the Rangers tonight. They got the New Jersey Devils on Saturday. And the next week, they have the Washington Capitals. And then, that's it. The Flyer season is over. And they have both the Detroit Red Wings and the Pittsburgh Penguins in front of them. Now, Philadelphia is one of those teams that have 2 ways to get in, either Metropolitan or Wildcard 2. That was a busy show. Thanks so much for being part of as much as you could have today. Much appreciated. Thanks to Charlie O'Connor for stopping by. Thanks to Anton Thun from Cortex. Thanks to Gordon Monson from the Salt Lake Tribune. Thomas Hickey, Islanders analyst and our first star who spent a lot of time cutting things up for us today, Matt Marchese. Thanks to Lance Kennedy and James Wilson behind the glass for making the show sound and look good. Thank you, gentlemen. The show, by the way, 10 games on the go around the NHL this evening. It's another busy one. We're back tomorrow.